Hi folks, welcome to the Money 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 podcast. I'm Surabhi Upadhyay and we come to you every week with some very interesting conversations to help you get your personal finances in order and get smart with your money. India has seen a slight improvement in its ranking on the Melbourne Mercer Global Pension Index 2019. Now, this is a study which compares retirement and pension systems around 37 different countries worldwide. This is good news, but perhaps the truth is that we are far from having a fully sufficient, fully adequate pension system. This week on the show, we discuss the findings of the Mercer report and also talk about how you can ensure retirement security for yourself. My guests are Preeti Chandrasekhar, India business leader, health and wealth, Mercer, and Mohit Gang, CEO and co-founder of Moneyfront.in. Thank you very much, Mohit and Preeti, for joining us on the show.
Thanks.
And Preeti, it reminds me, you know, a year rushes by so quickly because it was just last year when we were discussing how India is making tiny inroads and small improvements. So first things first, tell us how much have we improved our ranking and what has gotten us here?
So last year, and this actually is a global index which measures three key things. Very simply put, how much is the pension system giving me as a citizen of a country? That's the first thing. That is the adequacy. How much is it giving? Second one is how long will it be able to give it to me? That is a sustainability angle. And can I really trust it? That is the integrity angle. So these three angles collectively what make the index. As far as India is concerned, every year you actually have new countries joining the entire index calculation. So last year we actually had about 34 countries, we were 33. This year we had three more countries join, but we have moved up a notch a bit. So we actually have five countries behind us. Mm. So that way it is good news. But importantly, as an absolute value also, the index has improved marginally.
Okay, so that's the good news. But I mean, we have five more countries behind us, which means on a overall scheme of things, we're right at the bottom of the heap still. What are the major shortcomings, the shortfalls?
See, we are compared with countries like the Netherlands and Denmark, who actually not only have a social security pension, but they also have a asset-backed social security. So look at the kind of security that they have. So we are not there. And I don't think we should compare ourselves with them because they have a legacy and that's why they're there. We don't want to get into that right now at this stage and come up with a social security pension which is fully backed by assets. So let's see where we can make changes. Mm-hmm. Another key angle where if you look at some of the other countries like China, Japan, where they score above us is because they have a minimum age after which you give access to the money. Mm-hmm. In India, because of the socio-economic conditions and whenever we talk of NPS, we talked about you can't touch the money till you're sort of 58, 60 and there was everybody cried foul.
Yeah.
They said, oh no, we need withdrawal.
Yeah.
So the moment you talk of withdrawal and access to money much earlier on in age, your index value drops. Having said that, there are certain areas where we are making changes. And I think that's good. One is the unorganized sector. We've seen a lot of new schemes the government has introduced in the unorganized sector. You have the Atal Pension Yojana, which is sort of improved. The subscriber base is increasing by almost 4 to 5 lakhs every month. And we have a decent size there. There are new schemes that the government has introduced for retailers and small and marginal farmers. So that sort of helps you improve the ranking because the moment you have more minimum amount of money that is given, especially with the unorganized sector, that improves your ranking. That's one.
Mm-hmm.
And second, I think there's also the fact that there is a lot the country is doing around communication.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot that we are doing in terms of improving the for the private pensions in terms of the reporting, etc., just to sort of give a sense of security. There are things that we are doing, but I don't say that's enough. There's obviously a lot more that we can do as a country and as individuals to contribute to our own pension system. So
that's where we stand. Okay. Yeah. So that's the Mercer viewpoint. Now, Mohit, I mean, from a financial planning perspective, I'm sure, I mean, you come across a whole range of clients.
Absolutely.
What is your take on the availability of products, the choices, the options, and where we rank in terms of what the marketplace offers to ensure retirement security?
Okay. So look, there are multitude of products, and that's where the entire confusion lies. I think the number and the plethora of products which are available in the market is like too many. So too many cooks spoil the broth. So that's the case with pension products out there. So you have few state-defined products which your companies or corporates will give you. You have products like NPS, which have come into vogue now of late for last 4-5 years, and it's actually doing very well. One of the finer pension products available in the market. Then you have mutual funds who offer pension plans, retirement plans, and who offer normal mutual fund schemes and project it for long-term solutions. And then you have insurance companies who offer ULIPs and who offer retirement plans as well. So the range is extremely wide for investors to make a choice from.
Are investors really making the most of these choices? What does your experience say with clients?
So look, as a country, and as the report rightly brings out, our rankings are extremely poor all across. Like, and there's this interesting data. From 1990 to 2000, the EPF returned 2.5% real rate of return for the clients, right? So if that's your real rate of return, which the investors are earning, obviously the interest level is fairly low. There's one more interesting data point. At the retirement, which is the maturity stage, the mean balance of a PF investor in this country is 20,000 rupees. Why? Just because everyone has kind of withdrawn it much before the actual maturity. So no one keeps it for that long, basically, right? So the products are good. The benefits are actually very good. The communication part is lacking. People don't understand the nitty-gritties of it. And sometimes the products are extremely complex for people to like really grapple with. And I think final recluse for all Indian households is then property and gold. So that's where, and that's unorganized, so it's
and
not counted
for. And let's not
get
fixed deposits. So let's just let it lie in the bank. Yes. You know, who can make it work better? Now, you know, Preeti, if we sort of keep it simple, the accumulation phase when we're all earning, I think it's only in our 30s when we start thinking about the retirement corpus. Typically, the default deductions that happen go to your EPF. I mean, if you've done an additional NPS and that happens, what is your take on these default deductions or contributions that are made? And what is the experience? Because you speak to a lot of employers, to a lot of corporates as well. Are people moving more to the NPS?
So, interestingly, one thing which is the biggest carrot for anybody to save is not the fact that they need to save for retirement. They look at the tax breaks, okay? And that is an incentive for people to save. But if you ask us, I'm sure that is not the right
approach
towards saving. And that is why if you see people, the moment you have tax breaks, there's a lot of people talking about NPS. But I would not say that's true for everybody. I have seen, and when we talk to companies, we understand that corporates want to do something for their employees. Employees want to do something for themselves, but then they're not able to figure out what to do and how to do. And that really continues to be the biggest challenge. Companies launch corporate NPS, then, you know, it's all about communication again. If you want people to be engaged and actually sign up, you need to really communicate the importance of financial planning and retirement planning.
Absolutely. So let's demystify this. You know, in the earning stage, in the accumulation stage, yes. Mohit, where all does the money need to be parked so that you actually get to that corpus? And if you could run some numbers, because the numbers are absurd. I mean, last time I spoke to experts like you, I think for a 30-year-old, you need to retire with a sum of almost 6-7, you know, crores in today's, you know, money values to last up till 80 years of age, inflation adjusted.
So look, there are the actual computations can be really tedious, but the simple ways or the thumb rules of computations are. So you can either go with an income replacement method or an expense computation method, which means that if you are earning an X amount of salary today, let's say if you're earning 100 rupees of cash today, you might want to replace your retirement income with that with a ratio of 70% to 90% of that 100 rupees. So which means you will need, if your expenses are like 100 rupees today, you will need 70 to 90 rupees when you retire. So you will have to provision for that. The second way is you go with an expense computation method where you do the listing down of all your expenses, what will be your lifestyle expenses at retirement, you will definitely be out of EMIs, what will be your medical expenses at retirement, which will be a very, very big thing. You provision, you chart it out, and then you actually come out or arrive at a expense thing. A simpler way of doing all this is a Trinity rule, basically, which says that, let's say if you have a corpus of 100 crores, technically that corpus will last, 100
rupees. I was like, 100 crores corpus,
sorry,
really?
My
then
bad.
You don't need to worry at all.
If you have a corpus of 1 crore, basically, so that will typically last 25 years, which means 4% every year. So whatever be your requirement, let's say on an annual basis, if you need 4 lakhs a year, that means you need to have a 1 crore retirement corpus at your retirement age. And technically taking the so-called vanprasth ashram as 25 years of duration, so you're provisioned for that. So those are those are a few thumb rules to
compute. So where to start parking the money? I mean, EPF is happening by default in many cases. And that too, Preeti, I mean, actually I'll come in on this because here's the thing, because EPF itself is not mandatory. It is only mandatory if you're earning less than 15,000 rupees in a month, right? So whatever is happening over and above that is just sort of by default, because there is a system that's set up in most private firms, isn't it?
That is true. But you see, because of a few things that have started happening, you've seen EPFO in the news for many reasons. Mm-hmm. One, NPS is now competition. It's a new kid on the block as compared to EPF. Mm-hmm. So you are actually seeing competition, right? And that is actually helping, I would think, the subscribers to some extent, because both sides, the EPFO as well as the PFRD, really wants to do something different. And when we talk to people, we realize that the regulators are sort of looking at, you know, modernizing things, making, becoming more current, which is good for the subscribers. So you have choices. One, two, it just helps generally the market. And whether EPF versus NPS, I would think you look at both. I mean, if you actually have the money, why not? Because if you come back to the tax angle, then that is the reason both of them give different tax breaks, right? So my belief is, don't put all your eggs in one basket.
But look at both. So that same question to you, where all does the money need to go? In which all schemes? So you accumulate this corpus.
Got you. So there is this PF which your company will deduct. I think that's a good option. 8.5, 8.6% tax-free is a fantastic rate to earn. And people should definitely contribute and should not pull out from that when they move jobs or hop jobs. NPS has emerged as one of the finest pension products in the market today, undoubtedly. It's the lowest cost product which is available and with multiple options of investment. So you can invest in a blend of equity and debt products. You can automate your choices depending on your age and there are multiple other things which are involved out there. Two of the popular products which people still tend to do are mutual funds and insurance products. So mutual funds, may you have the normal pension products and you have normal mutual fund plans where people typically do SIPs if retirement is one of the key goals in the financial planning module. And for insurance, people tend to do ULIPs. And there is a market for retirement products also, which comes from the insurance banner. However, these products are not very popular. A normal mutual fund and a ULIP is a still more popular
product. Which is exactly what I wanted to talk about, because both mutual fund houses and insurance companies advertise these retirement plans, and they make you feel bad every time if you don't have money parked into these products, because you know they seem to promise the idea of a lovely retirement life. But is there any merit in them, in some of these retirement products?
Look, so I think the lock-in period, which is what she was, Preeti was also referring to, the withdrawal clauses are not very easy in most of these products. So for insurance products, technically you're locked in for 5 years. For retirement products of mutual funds, the exit load lasts till around age 58 or age 60, which is your retirement age. So that's a fairly longish period for exit load if someone is starting at age 30. You might want to go for a simpler mutual fund with 1 year exit load. And in terms of performance also, if you track the performance of these two segments, a normal mutual fund scheme or a large cap fund will tend to deliver slightly higher return than a mutual fund product under the retirement or the pension banner. Okay. It's maybe because of the conservative choices which the fund manager is taking out there. That's the whole
and
difference.
And any reason to look at retirement plans offered by insurance companies, which would be in the form of ULIPs? I understand tax is going to be a big benefit over there, because you stay locked in at least for five years. And after that, there's no long-term capital gains tax. So beyond that, is there any reason to look at ULIP-based retirement plans?
Tax in itself is a very big reason to go for that, these kind of products. There are products which have now come with a very nominal and minimalistic premium allocation charge, which was a big deterrent for the erstwhile insurance products technically. So there are products, if you carefully study, and investors should do that, if they carefully figure out products with very less expense ratios, then these are fairly long-term products. Insurance companies have a mandate to park these funds fairly safely, so they don't take unnecessary risks and chances. It's mostly managed in a manner that they have to deliver a certain yield.
So now, you know, Preeti, we've discussed, of course, during the accumulation phase, there are a lot of choices. One really has to look carefully. The question is, what once you touch 60?
So when you talk of post-retirement, one is you talk about the pension amount, the annuity, as you see. I mean, it's basically an income replacement. But I think what's also important is look at why do you need the money. It goes beyond just me having wealth or income, regular income. There are certain things about my well-being that need to get taken care of. Aspects relating to my health, which becomes a very big ticket item post-retirement.
Yeah. So here, you know, Mohit, clearly once you have this corpus, you could go simply park it in a, you know, the traditional way would be to park it in a fixed deposit and then you sort of just look at the interest income you earn. Now I hear a lot of talk about systematic withdrawal plans where you can park this money in a mutual fund and then systematically have sort of income. And then there is the question of annuities where you simply give the money to an insurance company and then you get an annuity payout. Which one do you think is the preferred route?
So there are many annuity products which are available in the market, and I'll go with the last one first because the range is really wide. You have an immediate annuity, you have a deferred annuity, you have an annuity with cover, without cover, and so on and so forth. There are multiple ways, right? Annuity yields in India are fairly low. So an immediate annuity product might not fetch you beyond 4 to 6 odd percent. That also, so 6 is also on the higher side, basically. If you have a deferred annuity, which means you are taking the annuity after 5 to 10 years, then still there is scope for the fund manager team to earn some money out of the your corpus and then give you a slightly higher rate on the annuities, basically. So the rate on annuity is fairly low. However, it's a confirmed thing. Right,
then so you will be getting
this kind
of return on your corpus
monthly, quarterly. You can fix your time frequency, and you will definitely get it. Right, when it comes to SWP, the first question is you should be having a huge mutual fund corpus which will last for those 15, 20, 25 years, whatever is the time block. And then you have to park it safely into either a liquid fund or a suitable debt fund, and then try and do the SWP mechanism. SWP mechanism is good because assuming your funds have been parked for fairly long, you are out of the exit load bracket. The taxation portion in mutual funds still remains though. Basically, so that
there
has to be compared.
There will be a 10% LTCG when you're
if it is an equity, yes. However, I would tend to believe that at that age, you would want to move everything to debt funds and then start an SWP. So the taxation will be as per your marginal tax bracket
the
at that rate. So it'll go in the short-term tax zone.
Okay. So coming back to annuities, which type of annuity gives the highest return?
Oh, that's a slightly tricky one because annuity rates are variable and they keep changing from time to time depending on the socioeconomic conditions and mortalities and so on and so forth. However, deferred annuities will have a slightly, as I told, will have a slightly higher interest rate as compared. I would tend to believe here that NPS as a product works well. If you have really taken NPS, then what happens is you can withdraw up to 40% of your corpus tax-free. You can withdraw complete 60% if you want, though 20% then becomes taxable. And the remaining you purchase annuities, basically. So it's a good mix of all the things, and your accumulation stage is also taken care of. In terms of annuities, as I said, the LIC is the largest player in the market, technically, because of its clout and the long-standing market, this thing. And annuity products by law can be offered only by pure play insurance companies. It can't be offered by mutual fund companies or any other format.
So and annuities are taxable, so it will not be tax-free
annuities
income.
Annuities are taxable,
so
of course.
So please bear that in mind. All right, final thoughts from both of you. Preeti, tips, advice that you would give to people, whether, you know, whatever age group they're in, to plan and save for a happy retirement.
Power of compounding is very, very important. And we were discussing, Mohit and I, that very few people understand that power of compounding, especially early in their age. So I think it's important for them to understand, start small, but start ASAP.
Absolutely. Mohit, your final word of advice.
Can't agree more with Preeti, I think. Early start is absolutely essential. Just a small example, someone starting at age 25 with 5,000 rupee monthly will accumulate at 12% around 3.2 CR. And if you start late, which is 10 years later, and if you start at age 35 at 12% CAGR, you will accumulate 94 lakhs. So
there is a
massive difference between the two accumulations. So early bird catches the worm.
Okay, that's very, very nicely summed up, Mohit. Thank you very much. Thanks to you as well, Preeti, for dropping in and giving us some nuggets, some information and some advice on how to go about planning for the silver years. And, you know, early bird catches the worm. I think that's the big takeaway. Thank you very much for joining in. Now, we always tell you to be pretty cautious and not to take any hasty investment decisions, whether it is your retirement, whether it's your present. And the same actually applies to the road as well. Do not be hasty on the road. Always follow the speed limit. Be the better guy. This is a message from Network 18 and Hyundai's initiative towards ensuring road safety in India. That's it on this week's podcast. You can catch the show at 6:30 p.m. on Tuesdays with repeats on Saturday and Sunday mornings only on CNBC TV 18. You can also find us on the CNBC TV 18 YouTube channel. Do send your feedback, comments, queries. Catch me on Twitter. My handle is at Surabhi Upadhyay. That's S-U-R-A-B-H-I-U-P-A-D-H-Y-A-Y. Don't forget to add the hashtag money. Catch you next week.